This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. 10-digit dialing in Indiana's 219 and 574 area codes will be getting underway this year, and you will have a six-month transition period to be able to prepare for the official change. Let's find out more about the changes, why they're happening, and some things you should know. If you start getting into the habit of dialing 10 digits now, you're already ready for the changes. But if not, we'll find out more. Anthony Swinger, spokesperson for the Indiana Utility Consumer Counselor's Office in Indianapolis, and he is with us to fill us all in. And thank you for joining us on the program today, Anthony.
Thanks for having me on, Chris. Always good to talk to you.
Well, it's good to talk with you. You keep us up to date on what's happening with our local utilities, if there are changes that are made. And this is a big change involving, in this case, all the telephone services here in Northwest Indiana, to be sure. Will you bring us up to date, first off, why the changes are necessary and what we should know? And I guess the nice thing is this is happening in stages. You don't have to do it all of a sudden right away, but you do have to remember to make the change.
That is correct, Chris. The 219 and 574 area codes in Indiana, as well as the 708 area code in Illinois, are among between 80 and 85 telephone area codes throughout the country that are transitioning to 10-digit dialing this year. What that means is that instead of calling, say, there's a local number you call regularly that's 555-5555, mm-hmm. you will need to call 219-555-5555 or 574 if you're in that area code, beginning in middle to late October of this year. There is a six-month transition period, so from April 24th to October 24th, you'll be able to reach local numbers either by calling seven digits or by using 10 digits, including the area code. But after October 24th, if you make those calls and don't include the area code, you'll be greeted with a recorded message asking you to hang up and try again with the area code. Many area codes throughout the United States have already transitioned to 10-digit dialing. They include the 317 area code in Indianapolis, the 812 area code, which spans the southern third of Indiana, and all of the area codes in northern Illinois, except for 708. 10-digit dialing has been in place here in central Indiana for about the last 5 years, and it's going to be implemented this year in 219 and 574.
And will you remind us what the change is all about? It's a national change, actually, and a very important national change, but probably to make it easier for everyone, it's ways to kind of ease yourself into it.
Absolutely. What this is really about at the end of the day is saving lives. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is available right now by calling a toll-free number, 1-800-273-TALK. The Federal Communications Commission has determined that if the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline could be reached through a simple three-digit code, it would be easy for everyone throughout the country to remember, and you could reach the lifeline with a three-digit code from any phone in all 50 states. Mm-hmm. And so 988 is going to be the new number for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline beginning in the summer of 2022. In order to make that work, though, any area code that has a 988 prefix and has not already transitioned to 10-digit dialing is going to have to make that change this year. By having all of the changes done by the end of 2021, 988 can be implemented next summer and will be reachable nationwide. And you kind of alluded to this in your question, Chris, but this in a lot of ways reminds me of when 811 was implemented statewide and nationwide for the Call Before You Dig number.
Uh-huh, that's right.
Call Before You Dig has been available through a toll-free number for years, but after 811 was implemented as a nationwide number for reaching Call Before You Dig, the number of incidents, pipeline ruptures underground due to excavation errors, all those things really dropped in numbers. The safety figures really, really improved as a result of 811. So it's really the same logic behind implementing 988 nationwide so that all Americans know that that is the number to call for the Suicide Prevention Lifeline no matter where you are.
And I also recall, too, that as far as the Veterans Health Administration is concerned, they've had to make the advice to veterans who happen to call in if they have problems to be able to use this special number. And now, once the change happens, they'll be able to take advantage of the 988 prefix as well, I would imagine.
Absolutely. The three-digit 988 code will be, again, available nationwide, all 50 states, and again, making access to the Lifeline much simpler and easier for everyone is going to save lives. Mm-hmm. It's really a minor inconvenience to go to 10-digit dialing in order to make that happen. As I said earlier, though, Chris, there are a number of area codes throughout the nation, including in central and southern Indiana and most of Illinois, that have already been through this transition to 10-digit dialing. The other area codes have had to do it because of dwindling number supplies and the need to add new area codes in those regions.
Right.
So this is something that's been done before. It's been done elsewhere. The transition has worked, and having this six-month grace period has really made a difference for allowing folks to get used to the changes and make any preparations that they need to make.
I suppose probably much of those preparations have to be made by the telecommunications companies, the telephone services that are out there that are offering their current services, and they have to probably beef up or change over the computers or whatever they happen to use for their switching systems to be able to accommodate all this.
That's true. There is a good amount of behind-the-scenes work that the telecom providers have to do to get ready for the change. For the consumer, in most cases, it's going to be as simple as getting in the habit of using the area code when you make a local call. We need to point out, 10-digit dialing does not change anything when it comes to whether a call is local or long distance. If the call is local now, it'll still be local even when you call the area code. If a call is free now, it's still going to be free after the transition. This doesn't change any of that. So that's important for folks to know. Another thing is that if you have medical monitoring devices, medical alert devices, alarm systems, speed dial numbers, and those are not already directed to toll-free or long-distance numbers, you may need to upgrade those sometime between mid-April and October 24th. And if you're in doubt about whether you need to do that, your best bet's going to be to contact your service provider, and they should be able to guide you through whatever path you need to take.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very important because we know a lot of people do have that service. They need it to save their lives or to keep healthy, and they have to make the changes. So it's plenty of time to be able to make those changes. Like you say, we've got this grace period or a transition period, as you wish to call it, that begins here in April and continues on until October, when the changeover, at least for making the 10-digit calls, have to take place. Have you gotten any response or any feedback already? I'm sure that the word's gotten out here this week about this, and I'm sure you probably heard some people already ask questions or maybe even complain about it already.
We've had a few questions about it to this point. Certainly, probably not to the extent as back 20 years ago, mm-hmm. when you had area codes being divided up to make room for new numbers, when you had the geographic splits going on. And most of Indiana went through that either in the 1990s or the early 2000s. Since area codes have been replaced by overlays in the last 10 years, and people have not had to change their numbers, that has really alleviated a lot of the concerns and a lot of the questions that we would get. So I think what we're seeing now with this 10-digit dialing implementation for the 988 number is more similar to what we've seen with area code overlays. But certainly we do recognize that folks are going to have questions. We do have information on our website to help explain this, and we encourage folks to either visit our website or contact us if they have questions about the transition.
I know in some cases I've actually made a change, I guess, a long time ago, it seems. Like you say, that some providers have kind of slipped in the changes maybe when they upgraded their equipment and they told their customers or the if it's a free number, they've told the organizations that have set up the toll-free numbers, be sure to tell people that you have to dial all 10 digits to be able to make sure that everything goes through. So for some, probably the transition's already happened, I would imagine.
That's true. And when you factor in that many people use for example, if people have moved, they keep their cell phone numbers from their old addresses. And so I think that helps with the transition a lot. The other thing is that in many cases, especially if you have a more advanced cell phone, you may already be making 10-digit calls, just not realizing it. There have been a lot of things in recent years to make these types of transitions a little less difficult.
I guess the important thing is that if you have questions that you need to bring up with your service provider, the telecom company that you work with, or your cell phone company, that you have to make sure that you make those changes. And if you have maybe changes that you have to make in business stationery. That's particularly true, I imagine, for many businesses that have ways, and if either for their websites or their printed stationery, they have to be sure that 10-digit number is very prominently displayed.
They do need to include that. At the same time, the good news here is that nobody has to change phone numbers, and what is a local call now will still be a local call even when you're dialing the area code. Mm-hmm.
And probably that applies to cost too. If you pay so much for a particularly local service, you're still going to pay that service, and you're not going to pay more just because you have to dial extra digits.
That's right.
When we ask here about whether you've gotten any feedback and all, obviously it's probably going to come closer to the change over time when people are most concerned. And the feedback, of course, well, because if you can get hold of the Utility Consumer Counselor's Office to get some help, that will be important. If you reach your phone service provider, that'll be even more important since they're the people that are going to be making the change.
Right, and that's all the more reason that we're working to get the word out now. Again, the 6-month grace period where you can either use 7 or 10 digits to call a local number starts on April 24th. So we've got several weeks until the transition actually starts. During that 6-month period, you can make a call either with or without the area code locally. And again, beginning on October 24th, if you try to call someone without the area code, you will get a recorded greeting telling you what you need to do to make the call work. So it's not as if you'll just try calling a number October 24th and nothing happens. You will get that recording reminding you to use 10 digits if you need that. Mm-hmm. So again, this is a transition that's happened in many area codes throughout the United States. And again, roughly 80 area codes are going to be going through it this year, both here in Indiana as well as Illinois, and about 3 dozen other states around the country.
Wow. Well, at least it's better that you get a message telling you that you have to try again than opposed to making the call in October and all of a sudden the call not going through. At least you get a message telling you, please try it again. You know, this is, you know, you'll have to do it with 10 digits. It's easy to remember, and it'd certainly be less painful if you're in a hurry and you have to make an important phone call and you get that message. Well, Anthony, thank you.
There's a safety net.
That's a good way to put it. Thank you. For being with us to talk about this, Anthony. We appreciate it. It's the important news that we know about. And the fact that we have the 6-month transition period is going to help, I think, everyone out. If you haven't had the opportunity or you have to make the 10-digit phone call already, at least if you have already, you're in good stead, that you're already set, and it's just going to be as if nothing changed. But if you are making digits, only the seven digit numbers, you have to make the change and be sure that you do it here definitely before October 24th. Thank you for being with us to talk about it today.
Happy to be here. Thanks again, Chris.
You're welcome. Anthony Swinger is the spokesperson for the Indiana Office of Utility Consumer Counselor. Once again, here in the area code 219 or 574 area codes, and over in Illinois, the 708. The changes to 10-digit dialing is going to happen with the transition period beginning in April. You're listening to Regionally Speaking here on Lakeshore Public Radio. The city of Gary has gotten involved, along with many other communities in the country, in what is called the Guaranteed Income Movement. And here in the city of Gary, we have the executive director of GIVE, as it's known for short. We have Burgess Peoples with us. And Burgess, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit more about the overall guaranteed income validation effort, which is how GIVE got its name, and the idea behind it that so many cities in the country have decided to join part of.
Yeah, I will say that Mayor Tubbs, former mayor of Stockton, California, he took this idea from what Martin Luther King had written in 1967, and it was passed as a bill and 71, but before it can get pushed through for any traction to come along with it, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. So it lay dormant for some time, and then Andrew Yang wrote a book about it, and then Mayor Tubbs took Martin Luther King's idea and actually put it into action.
I see.
A lot of the cities that are getting involved, this is before COVID, they were having financial disparities in their cities. And COVID, all it did was make it worse. It just really magnified the financial disparities in our cities. And with the city of Gary, we were not exempt from that. So I'm glad that he went forth and put this in place, because what I did was I saw the opportunity and I'm like, this is something we can do with our residents. And I took it to Mayor Jerome and he's like, yes. No brainer. Let's get all the information we need and get this thing started, because our people are hurting just like the rest of the people in our nation.
Will you give us an idea, at least locally, what the city of Gary is facing these days? We, all face the same sort of thing in all of our communities to a point, but it's especially exacerbated in the city of Gary, I understand.
Yes. Across the state of Indiana, there is, there's different brackets of what is the percentage of individuals on unemployment, and that shows how the effect of COVID has hit a lot of the households. I mean, even the median households of, say, the individuals that were above poverty, they just, working class citizens or whatever. So now you have individuals that have lost their jobs, sometimes both income individuals have lost their jobs, so now their family is at the poverty line. Mm-hmm. That has not been heard of in probably 10 or 15 years. But our unemployment ratio is now the highest in the state at 15%. And with that, we have had an influx of individuals needing resources. And from some of the food drives that I even coordinated with some of the churches here in the city of Gary, our numbers went from 200 to almost 2,000 with families needing food. Our resources, as far as rental assistance and electric assistance, utility assistance, and all these others have started to deplete because so many people are in need right now. So our numbers in those areas have skyrocketed due to COVID and the loss of employment. So right now, this is the best opportunity to combat some of that. Of course, our state have released some finances for some of the need. But I'm so glad that we are taking a part in this, because this will give individuals that are randomly selected an opportunity to pull themselves out of poverty by having a guaranteed income for 12 months.
That's good. Burgess, will you talk a little about the idea for the pilot program and some of the makeup of it, and in particular how people can get involved in it?
Yes. Now, for the city of Gary, you must be a resident of the city. You must be 18 years of age and older. And you must be at a salary medium of $35,000 or less. Mm-hmm. There will be a mailing going out to our residents that meet those criteria, and then there are some that are just have been in poverty for some time. When the letter go out, it would have a link for the application and also a survey. In order to participate, the residents must complete both and send them back. We are using the Mayors for Guaranteed Income research team, outsourcing the enrollment process with them, because I want to keep it fair, and they already have a lottery system set up of what they use, which is really awesome because now it's perfected. So with that system, once our residents send their information back, they will be put into the lottery system, and the gift recipient will be randomly selected. and we'll get that information back, and then we can move forward with the program.
Where did the information come from that you're able to assess the need in out there, and particularly to be able to create the list that, that you're working with, that in turn asking for the survey to be returned and the possibility that somebody might be selected?
The list will come from the census. I mean, that's the only way you can, you know, really tell who's what income level a person is, where they reside, you know, because the census have that information. So that, I think, is the best way to do it, and that's where the names will be pulled from, mm-hmm. because it lists on there what your income is. So they'll know who to send these letters out to. We get the names, and we send out the mailers, and all the information go back to California. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as how they're selected, that lottery system is electronic. So the names are put into that lottery system, and the lottery system would choose 125 names, if not more, of those that can participate in the to be a gift recipient.
Now, as the program is set up now, what timetable have you like to establish, certainly for the survey to go out and to get the surveys back, and in turn for this lottery process to be able to choose the 125 people that will be selected in the pilot program?
Yeah, it's looking like right now, I would say about 2 months before we can do anything else. The mm-hmm. letters will go out March 15th, and we have to give them time to, you know, complete them and send them back. So I'm looking at probably a 30-day window before we close that window of when they can return those applications once they go out. And once they are received and put into the lottery system, then we will receive those names from the Mayor's Guaranteed Income Research Team in California, and we will make an announcement of the gift recipient. Then we have an onboarding process. They have to understand whatever income they have currently. That is their income. This is a supplement. This is not to take the place of.
Right.
So we want to give them a hand up instead of a hand out. And we definitely want to make poverty escapable. So if you're using this as income, I understand, because a lot of people just do not have anything coming in right now. Unemployment for some still have not started. But if you have income, let this be a supplement to that, to help you get ahead, to help you do some of the things that you dream of doing.
What kind of support and maybe even contributions from folks in the Gary area to this type of program? What kind of support are you getting and reaction to it?
The reaction has been magnificent. I mean, everyone, what they have are questions. So I'm so glad you invited me on today so I can clear up some of that and answer uh-huh. some of the questions, because what you're asking me is what they're asking.
Okay.
The other thing is, there are, you know, the university, of course, IUN Northwest, and nonprofits here in the area. Everyone is like, hey, whatever you need, we are working with you. We want to have great success here in the city of Gary. So this could be, you know, spread abroad and more cities can get involved, especially those that are financially strapped right now, to help their residents. So we have community partners, we have corporations that are willing to sow a seed into this to make sure we have that you know, that straight and sustainable start. So I'm really grateful for the outpouring of support that we're getting from everywhere.
That's great. Now, who is putting in the support initially here if we get the pilot project started?
That will be the National Mayors for Guaranteed Income organization. They have given us $500,000 seed dollars to get the pilot started.
Mm-hmm. And if things go well with this pilot program, is it likely to continue on? Is that the intent, that you hope that you get the support from the community and from other sources to be able to put together this support to help people out when they need it the most in Gary?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. That is the aim. That is what we really want to do. My thing is to have a solid start and have sustainability with this start, with this pilot. I want to be able to, you know, extend it past the 12 months and to help more families, because 125 is great, but there are so many more that are in need.
Mm-hmm. Now, if anybody has any questions, if they are concerned maybe about what they hear, what they've seen, where can they address the questions and get the answers that maybe they need, so that when the surveys go out and they get to return them back, they'll get their answers?
Yes, they can reach us at info@givegary.org. They can call 219 630-6754, or they can go to the website. We'll definitely have a lot of information on there as well, and that's www.givegary.org.
Well, Burgess, thank you very much for being with us to talk about the this program, the pilot program, which is called GIVE, which stands for Guaranteed Income Validation Effort, and set up here in the city of Gary. And the best of luck to you and everybody participating, and I hope this does continue beyond just the one-year pilot program.
Thank you so much, Chris.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversations to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
My dad worked on the EJ&E Railroad, and he had bought some lots in Glen Park. He bought two lots, and he helped build a small house on one lot while he started a bigger house next door. That was at 44th and Maryland Street. It was multinational. Polish people seemed to go on one lot. We were German, and we lived on Maryland Street. My first girlfriends were Polish, and they lived on 45th Avenue. And we all started at Riley School. It's gone now. About the time that I was aware that the blacks came in was when Joe Lewis won his biggest fight. I remember because there was a Roxy Theater on Broadway near Ridge Road, and there was a whole group of black people came down for this big fight that he had won. And I was a kid. I was probably 12 or 13 years old. But that was a big affair. The Depression was real tough here in Gary and Miller, every place. This whole area, I think, was hit hard by the Depression. I can remember we were poor, and my mother was working in a grocery store then. They were divorced, and a lot of people were on relief. I had won a scholarship to the University of Chicago, but I couldn't afford the tuition. So junior college was wonderful. I think we only paid about $8. They had three junior colleges in Chicago then, and they all had the same curriculum as the University of Chicago, so you couldn't beat it. At the junior college, I was lucky enough to meet Joe. He was Jewish, which was new to me, except my mother had worked for a lot of Jewish people. We're sitting next to one another in a humanities class. That's a course everybody should have. Humanities is one of the best courses that you can have. And one day he said, let's ditch school. Let's ditch school and go to a movie. So we did. And when my dad met Joe, he said, doesn't he have any money? I said, no, his father has a grocery store and he works there, but he's working in the grocery store part-time, but he's going to school. He said, but you walk all the time. I said, that's good exercise. He doesn't have a lot of money, Dad. So we enjoyed walking, and we did. We walked a lot. It was love at first sight. I really think so. We had 73 years together, and he was the handsomest guy. Everyone will agree with that.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.